The weather outside is frightful, as those of us who have driven in from the east can attest to. We know where all the committee members are, so that's good. We're starting something new, as you know. The legislature determined that we were going to come up with a legislative forecast to assist us in evaluating the economy of the state of North Dakota, and also to give us input as we have to decide what our revenue forecasts are actually going to be. We do that at the beginning of the session. We get input and data from OMB and from their consultants, and then we have to make the final determination what are the numbers that we're going to use to put the budget together. So we were looking for some additional assistance for the legislative branch as we prepare to look at that budget that comes to us in December of next year. And we had a proposal, an RFP that went out. We had two groups that sent in proposals, but only one proposal met the requirements of our RFP, which included a date that they had to be here by, and one came in late, and under long established practice, we don't accept late proposals. So today we have a proposal that we will hear, but we will first start with memorandums on oil and gas revenue and general fund revenue, and that will be Adam.
Mr. Chairman and the members of the committee, so I'll start with the general fund monthly update and then go on to the oil update. Both of these are memos that we've been doing this session. We've been sending them out to all the legislators by email. They are also available on the website. But the general fund numbers, I think some of you saw preliminary numbers or also saw the OMB Revenue E-News that would have the same information in it. Just to highlight a couple of things from the general fund monthly update, you'll notice that we were down, we were under the forecast for the month of October. On the tax and fee revenues, we were down by about 11% or $22 million compared to the forecast. And then the total general fund revenues, including the transfers, we are also still down about $22 million, but it was only about 8% after the transfers were included. However, for the biennium to date, we've collected about $590 million for tax and fee revenues, and the total general fund revenues for the biennium to date have been close to $1 billion. And so we're pretty much right on with, for the biennium to date, just slightly above forecast. In the tax and fee revenues, we're up about $2.7 million and about $3 million in the total general fund revenues for the biennium to date. And then as you can see, the graph at the bottom just showing the how that's tracking, including the previous months and then the volatility of it as well.
I have a question.
And Representative Carlson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Adam, just remind me how we take those Bank of North Dakota profits. Is it quarterly or how do we do that?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the Bank of North Dakota profits are determined by consulting with the bank and OMB. So they determine when those profits will be transferred. So it could be at any time during the biennium. They work with each other based on cash flow needs for the general fund as well as timing of things for the bank. But they determined that they would do the transfer of $70 million at this time.
And our total was what again for the biennium?
$140 million for the bank profits.
So we took half of it right away.
Correct, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? Okay, Adam, continue, please.
Sure, and I guess just as a point of reference on the general fund, in case you were wondering where that is in the grand scheme of things, for the 17-19 biennium, at the close of the session, the forecast provided for $3.49 billion of tax and fee revenues, about $840 million for transfers and other sources. So total tax and fee revenues and transfers includes is at about $4.35 billion. So at $1 billion of actual collections through October compared to the 4.35 for the biennium. Moving on to the second memorandum, there was the oil and gas tax revenues monthly update. So this one just came out on Friday, the email came out. The first part there, the price and production, just a reminder, the price and production relates to the collections from the activity precedes the collections. So 2 months prior to the collections, we have the activity happening. So we have the price and production from that activity. And then those collections come in and are distributed 2 months later. And so you'll see the collections through November, whereas the prices and production are as of September. And you can see the first 2 months looking at the graph that we were under in collections, and then these last 2 months here we've been over the forecast. The production numbers have been quite a bit higher than the original forecast. The price has been tracking below the forecast. However, looking at today's current prices, we anticipate that in the next few months of reporting, those prices will also be above forecast. So we would anticipate collections in the next few months will be above the forecast. You can see at the bottom of the page the collections for the month of November. We were over the forecast. We had about 100 by about 9% or 11 million. And for the biennium to date, because we had those first 2 months that we were below, we're tracking very close to the forecast number. We're over by about 2 million, but we've collected $516 million for the biennium to date, of which $116 million has been deposited in the general fund. And then again, for the sake of perspective, just to give you those numbers, the forecast at the close of the legislative session included $3.12 billion for the total oil and gas tax revenue collections, which included $400 million for the general fund, and that's the cap. So we're about 25%, a little over 25% of the way there to reaching that $400 million.
Are there any questions of Adam? Okay, thank you. And we knew you were where you were, and the only thing we have done is roll call, which you're okay on, and went through the revenue, the monthly revenue update. Okay. Presentation by the council staff on a memorandum, the RFP.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, so just I don't want to steal any of the thunder from IHS, but just to kind of highlight and summarize some of the things from their proposal, we prepared a memorandum. Just a couple of things from the very first page to highlight what the request entailed. The two main parts of the request dealt with general economic forecasting data, kind of essentially to provide a short term as well as a longer term outlook for the economy in general. And then also the main part being the second item with North Dakota's economy, looking for detailed data specific to North Dakota's economy. And that detailed data would include assumptions related to the oil and gas industry as well as the agriculture industry, and then the changes in the state's tax bases, which corresponds to information that gets provided to OMB in the executive budget process. And of those changes in the tax bases, we'd be looking at taxable sales and purchases, motor vehicle sales, personal income, and then corporate income. On the second page, we also get into the proposal from the consultant that we received. Just a couple of things to highlight there. IHS is a company that provides information and insight and advisory services to a variety of different businesses and economic sectors. They're also, just for your note, a publicly traded company that was formed in 2005. The company was originally established in 1959. The key personnel that will be involved in the project are listed. Their credentials are listed in detail in the proposal itself. The expertise and experience section, they did highlight in their proposal three examples of revenue forecasting where they provide services to other governmental entities. The third page of the memo there, They did have a forecasting plan outlined in their proposal. One of the things they provided was an outline, kind of the timeline for the process. They have existing models that they can use and then adjust as needed for North Dakota. Those models are able to provide short-term and long-term forecasts. They have a number of different components within their within the business, and so they are able to, they have individuals and groups that are working on agricultural commodity forecasts, and they also do provide analytical services for the energy industry. So those components will give them industry-specific economic forecasting data as was requested in the RFP. And then the very last section there highlights the proposal cost, and so IHS submitted their proposal at just over $49,000, and that would be the cost to procure the services from them. So with that, I can answer any questions. Otherwise, I'm sure IHS would be able to go through the details of their proposal. We do have a copy of the proposal for you as well.
Are there any questions of committee members prior to the presentation by IHS? Okay, gentlemen, whoever's going first, and make sure the microphone is turned on. Yep, it sounds like it is.
Good afternoon. Thank you all to the members for the opportunity to talk a little bit about our proposal in support of the revenue forecasting process. As Adam said, this is the type of activity we do for a number of states, either directly for legislatures or revenue taxation, OMB offices. But I think generally we're supporting about 45 states with our forecast and how they do their revenue estimating as they go about collecting receipts, tracking receipts, and so forth. within the presentation, we've put in a lot of content, which is meant for reference material.
You forgot to introduce yourself, so we're wondering who is this voice.
Sorry, my name's Brendan O'Neill. I apologize. My name's Brendan O'Neill. I'm managing principal within the IHS Market Economics and Country Risk Practice, or business line. I'm based in our Washington, D.C. office. I would be the proposed executive in charge for this engagement if awarded, and part of that role means ensuring that the project is delivered on time, is adequately resourced to be able to support you as the membership utilizing these forecasts, as well just any general support that we can offer to the committee outside of the specific deliverables. We see these types of engagements as very interactive. It is as much a dialogue and conversation when we go about doing this work, and it's important for us to have that back and forth with our clients, with you as members, to fully incorporate the dynamics that drive the state economy, convey the dynamics that are part of the national economy that have an impact in terms of where revenues trend for the state. So as I said, I've included a lot of reference material in this presentation. I will spare you a lot of that detail. Jim Diffley, my colleague here, has been our principal economist, our chief U.S. regional economist, who has most directly engaged our state clients over a couple of decades. So he'll talk about the specifics of the model, but I'm happy to fill in some general background in terms of our company's background and the types of services that we provide. As was referenced in the summary given by Adam, IHS has been around since 1959. We're a public company. We're currently headquartered out of London, UK, but have about 34 offices throughout the world, about 10,000 employees, 10 to 12,000 employees that are separated between economists, industry analysts, data specialists. We deal in a lot of information. That is our business. We went through a merger last summer IHS did with a company called Market, which is principally focused on the financial industry. I think probably helpful to understand the origins of our economics business. Two founding companies, one by the name of DRI, Data Resources Inc., which was formerly part of Standard & Poor's, that was founded out of the Harvard Economics Department in the 1960s by Otto Eckstein. The other key legacy company that founded IHS Economics, or what had been IHS Global Insight, was WEFA, the Wharton Econometric Forecasting Associates, founded in the early 60s by Dr. Lawrence Klein, Nobel laureate in economics. That is the legacy from which our economics and our forecasting capital and capability comes. And I know from personal experience, when I was staff in the Massachusetts legislature, before ever coming to work at IHS or Global Insight, there were two sources of forecasts that we used to pay attention to. We certainly had estimates produced by the executive branch, the House and the Senate produced their own budgets. Outside groups had produced their own estimates, but when it came down to it, the two that we really listened to the most were DRI and WEFA. They were the gold standard. So years forward, it's always fun for me to be back in this type of environment because it brings me back to the old days of when I actually used to use these forecasts. As Adam pointed out in his presentation, our economics business is but one of many different analytical groups at IHS. In many respects, we are the foundation of a lot of the forecasting work that our other industry research teams produce, be they energy, automotive, chemicals, aerospace and defense, maritime, trade. We set the assumptions that the other research groups base their forecasts off of. So we are very much the foundation of analysis. And we do that by forecasting over 200 countries globally. We forecast all 50 states, 362 metros, 403 metros in the US, as well as all 3,200 counties. So we have an understanding of not just what's happening at the global economy, very much part of the top-down methodology that we employ, but as well the bottoms-up and understanding local economic dynamics. Not going to go through this, but obviously we've been cited many times over the years in terms of being consistently accurate, and it's we don't hang our hat on any particular award. I think it's more important to us as a forecasting firm, where oftentimes the premise is that you're going to be wrong, but how wrong are you? But I think for us, the standard we strive for is consistency in our forecasting and being as consistently accurate as possible. And for that accuracy, for that insight, we are often called out in media for commentary on an ongoing basis, daily, globally, thousands of mentions of IHS across all our different research areas every day in terms of media mentions. So I'll set it up and turn over to Jim in terms of some of our existing work that we're doing for states in terms of revenue forecasting. But as I said, we have our business model is really twofold. Fundamentally, we have ongoing systematic forecasting that we do at a lot of the geographic levels I mentioned, where we're producing monthly forecasts of state economies, U.S. economy, other country economies. And we add to that forecasting by doing bespoke models, custom models, as it relates to a specific client's requirements. And that's what we've proposed in this case, and is symbolic of the type of work we've done for other states. So about 45 states, as I mentioned, are currently using our services, our syndicated research services that provide regular forecasts of their state economies. A subset of those, we are working with directly to develop bespoke models on, particularly for revenue forecasting, but more broadly, our state work in tax forecasting extends not just to revenue, but we'll look at things like bond issuance, supporting of that, evaluation of economic development incentives, tax incentives, and things of that nature. So, you know, it's not just looking at revenue estimating per se. So, Jim, did you want to elaborate?
Certainly. Thank you all. And Jim Diffley here. Thank you for inviting me. I'm now a consultant, executive director in the consulting team for IHS Markit. But let me a little about my background. I headed the regional service, managed the forecast of 50 states and those 400 metros from 1999 to 2014 before I moved into consulting. Before that, I was for 10 years with the New Jersey Treasury Department, where I was responsible for forecasting tax revenues. What I did at that time was take advantage of the innovation that Wharton Econometrics had established in the 1980s to have these state economic models and forecasts, and I would use the outputs of the state economic models as inputs into my tax forecasting models for the various tax streams in New Jersey. And that's precisely what we do for New York State now. It's precisely what we do for the city of Philadelphia now. We have these existing forecasts that are developed from, frankly, from our world global economic forecast, U.S. macroeconomic forecast and regional forecast, right down to in your case, North Dakota, fully fleshed out forecast of income variables by type, employment variables by detail sector, wage variables, consumer spending variables, et cetera, and so on. Those are the things that we know as economists drive tax bases that and drive ultimately tax revenue, because we build models out of that, fully taking into account what we know about the operation of the unique particular tax base in question. Income taxes differ across states, sales tax coverage differs, et cetera. So we have to customize it in that regard. That's what we propose to do for you. All right, in your case, the North Dakota case, we have a unique dependence on energy and agricultural issues. But now, and something, by the way, that wasn't true in the 1990s, say, when I first joined the firm, have a energy division, a very large, well-respected energy division that came out of Cambridge Energy Research Associates, CERA, you may have heard of, run by Dan Juergen, who's still with our company, still on the board. IHS purchased CERA before they purchased Global Insight and the economics function. They have a fully, and I'll give some examples of it, fully fleshed out energy service that goes into great detail on the Bakken play, amongst other plays across the country and around the world, right? So we have a daily update on energy prices, energy forecast, price forecast, volume forecast, exploration forecast, et cetera, and so on, that feed into our other models. We also have an agricultural service, right, that forecasts commodity prices, planting, et cetera, that will apply here. I happen to be an expert on neither of those per se, but I take their inputs for our economic modeling. Okay, and we apply it thereafter. So that's the basic structure of what we propose to do for you. We have a technical approach here, as you very nicely laid out in your RFP, and we thought that was very well thought out. And here again, I guess we're going to leave these. You have access to them both in front of you and in electronic form. Following up the tasks of that we will endeavor to go through as we first build a tax model for you for North Dakota, and then generate forecasts. We have the capability of generating both short-term and long-term forecasts, as Adam laid out, because your economic forecasts are long-term. We have the capability of running scenarios, alternative scenarios. Suppose you think oil prices, or suppose some people in our firm think oil prices are going to go up faster than others, something else, or slower, or down. We can run the implications of that in the tax model, et cetera. So these are steps we take in building the model. Now, I'll assume you don't want to spend detailed time looking at this right now, but I'm glad to do that if you would. So task one, let's see, and that describes the national economic forecast. This is a schematic of our U.S. macroeconomic model. Again, any economists among you will recognize what's happening there. The great thing about economics is everything depends upon everything else. So we have to structure this in some way in a flowchart where the arrows are going in both directions all the time, but that's what our econometric models are for, and we've been very successful with that, as Brendan showed. I'll leave that for you to understand as well. We have our energy service. Now, to give you a description of our energy commodity analysis, I'll leave this for you as marketing material. We are top of the state of the art in terms of energy services, I think we'll agree. And we hope to demonstrate that to you as we go along. On the right-hand side, you see some of our analytical tools, which is not something necessarily we'll bring to play in this project, but they are giving an example of the depth of our energy expertise. Our agricultural
question. I have a question on your energy. As the energy industry continues to evolve, how do you keep up with the changes in the industry? For example, 3 years ago, it took many more people to drill a well in the Bakken, and it's changed. How do you keep up with the industry?
So as an economics firm, before IHS was put together with CIRA and Global Insight, I myself, my economics team couldn't have done that. But CIRA does. We were, for instance, very prescient in understanding how the costs of exploration would go down, including the unconventional tight oils, as the, you know, the OPEC-induced price decline occurred, and so that production would be profitable at lower prices in a way that hadn't been realized a few years before. But how do we do it? Because we have a large energy team based in Cambridge and Washington with Brendan, and they do it. We've got specialists in every area. Brendan, I'm sure you have something to jump in.
Yeah, I would just add that we've got over 1,000 analysts and data specialists focused on the energy industry, all aspects of the energy industry. Obviously, with the dynamic and the emergence of unconventional oil and gas over the last decade or so, we've spent quite a bit of time focused on not just identifying those plays, because we have the technological, geological databases that inform the economics of those drilling practices. What is the break-even point? When is it profitable to drill and not drill? But we also have a cost side that examines the actual costs of drilling, and that includes all those people in the energy value chain, all those suppliers in the supply chain, in terms of what those production costs look like, both at an upstream production cost and differentiating things like unconventional oil and gas, shale, tight oil, from deep water drilling, shallow water drilling, that type of thing. So we understand those cost models, not just for the oil and gas industry per se, but actually by the different type of drilling. And therefore that informs the economics of each individual play or each individual well site. And we have databases that track production from each individual well site globally.
Good.
Continue, please.
Anything else? So there's a flow chart of our agricultural model. Again, I'm not an expert in agriculture, and the basic members of the team are not experts, but we'll call upon our experts to be on top of the forecast for the various products that are produced in North Dakota. Methodology and approach described in some detail here. Again, I'll let you read that.
I just add to the same approach when forecasting agricultural commodities. We look at a stage of processing. Process of building up the forecast, which isn't to say, well, what is the price of wheat, what is the price of sorghum? Now, we take it all the way back, look at the costs involved in production, land costs, labor costs, equipment costs, capital costs, as well as things like fertilizer and so forth, and then figure out what is that going to mean in terms of overall farm income, because ultimately, the number we're after, particularly as it relates to revenue, is farm income and feeding personal income. So we are looking at a county level in the U.S. Farm income across the different crops.
When you are working with a state and working in agriculture, for example, do you go in and visit or have communications with like the soybean groups in the state or the wheat groups or the other commodity groups that have a certain amount of expertise What's your history of that?
Yeah, the individual product groups within IHS Economics have had a long history of trying to be on top of the experts in those particular industries on the business side. So from a regional perspective, we have an analyst back in it's Carl. He's actually in North Carolina in North Carolina office right now, who monitors North Dakota economic activity closely, including having contacts that can be accessed every day. We have, in the ag space, we have analysts, Stuart Ramsey is a fellow in Ron Brendan's team right now, who has connections in each of the major commodities that we deal with. Brendan's mentioned Associated Consulting with some of the machinery groups for that purpose. And then similarly in the oil sector, where we're deeply entrenched with clients within the industry itself.
Yeah, and we've done work for the individual grower groups over the years, even at the state level. I know we've done work for Texas Rice Federation, Illinois Corn Growers Association. So we're used, we're often having dialogues with these types of groups. I think we'd welcome the opportunity to speak to any of the grower groups in North Dakota that might help otherwise shed some light in terms of what they're seeing as far as activity and how that can help inform the forecast. So we're very open to that.
Exactly. And in my own tax revenue forecasting experience for New York and others, I'm very receptive to information from the clients themselves. And so I'd encourage you to provide an ongoing communication with us as you see things evolve in the state. All right. So as a teaser, here's our current economic forecast, right, which we update every month, and you'll have access to, and we'll utilize in our forecast. Pretty substantial growth in the U.S. expected for 2017 out through 2020 in the green bars, and an unemployment rate coming down to right around 4% with the most recent stimulus. This includes some general assumptions about the tax reform / tax cut that's about to be implemented, but obviously that's a source of some uncertainty now. Tracking consumer markets, we have a full consumer service. Some of our economists specialize in that. So we have, for sales tax purposes in your case, we monitor all aspects of the influences of consumer demand and the spending impacts. We're looking for the best Christmas season, by the way, in 5 years, I believe, this year. Our oil service, to come back to the specific question about how we track oil, here's our current oil forecast in terms of price of and Brent crude oil moving up at a relatively modest pace. And obviously, you are all too familiar with the recent gyrations in oil prices as they've affected your economy. Recognizing, of course, that investment in exploration and production in the U.S. is a very big driver of U.S. economic activity during the run-up in price, the boom in prices, and the boom in unconventional exploration in the U.S., particularly from, you'll see those lines from 2012 to 2015 when the price collapsed, or 2014. So it's a very tight relationship. They're very important for the economy, and we estimate, for instance, activity in North Dakota, or technically play-by-play is the way we look at it in the Bakken. Here's a current commentary published recently on the North American crude oil market. I just picked something from one of our publications that we'll take advantage of just to look at the headlines, the Brent spread narrowing by early next year, the implications of the Keystone pipeline shutdown, and crude coming from Canada, and then the heavy crude market overall looking tight. Just to give an example of the types of things we're on top of all the time. Okay. Our regional models themselves are structured state by state. We actually have a state model of the North Dakota economy. You think about the local economy being the spending and activity within the state on state-produced goods and services. Export services are what drives economic activity in regional economic theory. That is, things that the state can provide that the rest of the country and the rest of the world wants, and that generates income for businesses and wage earners, et cetera, within the state. And then, of course, we've got the influence of population and demographic changes, birth rates, migration, very, very important in North Dakota, for instance, in terms of labor force aging, and then, of course, in terms of importing workers, for instance, into the oil industry in the last decade. And all those relationships, all those arrows are summarized in econometric equations that are updated regularly and used in the generation of the economic model and hence forecast. Current forecast for North Dakota, the green line is employment, just to pick one of the variables, the most common sort of broad variable, but we have a forecast for every sector in North Dakota of employment. This is the overall employment, and you're all, again, familiar with the boom and bust owing to the oil price swings and its associated effects, spillover effects on the rest of the economy, which we model. So if you ask us what would happen if oil prices accelerate again in 2019, say, we'd not only be able to model employment in that sector, but it model the associated boost to the rest of the economy from new construction, spending of the workers in the sector, et cetera, and so on, and the overall economic impact on the state. That's our current forecast. The shaded area to the right for 2018 on positive growth, you see, relatively modest compared to the early part of the decade, but I think you would have expected that. But that's our baseline forecast right now. So task two is those, from your RFP, those North Dakota economic forecasts. So we've answered each item for you, I think, satisfactorily, I hope. We haven't mentioned, Brendan, our pricing and purchasing group, which is another division in the economics team, which looks at commodities, materials, as an aid to purchasing managers across the country, but it's very important for particularly here in understanding price behavior in the commodity sector. So that's another group of experts that we leverage regularly. And when I say we leverage them, we don't just talk to them. Actually, the outputs of their models become inputs into our model. So that this is all a nice, cohesive, consistent set of economic forecasts we provide across geographies, industries, et cetera. And here's the team. I'm in the lower right. Brendan's in the upper center. He made the slide. That's why he's up there. I'm in the lower right. I'm essentially going to be senior advisor to the project. Laura and Jan will be the execution team, but I'll be working with them closely as well. Carl, by the way, lower right, is the regional economist in charge of North Dakota right now.
It's just a little bit of background on the team. As I said, I just make sure that we have enough resources, and we have an internal standard called Client Delight at IHS, so we need to make sure that all our clients feel that delight. So that's fundamentally my job, is to make sure that you're happy with the work we're doing. Jim is the senior advisor. He is the chief regional economist. He oversees all of the revenue forecasting work we do, so he will be the most senior economist on the project. Laura Hand, who is a part of my team, going to be the project manager. She also has experience in revenue forecasting because she's formerly been part of the Congressional Budget Office prior to coming to Global Insight or IHS. And as well, Yan Jiang is relatively new, but she's a very senior PhD economist who comes to us from
BNP Paribas,
big French bank. But she has also been most directly involved in a recent project we have done for the Virginia Department of Taxation, validating their revenue forecasting model. So I think we've got a really solid team. And as Jim said, Carl Kuykendall is our regular analyst for North Dakota, looking at the state economy day in, day out.
Senator Cook has a question.
Gentlemen, I think it's safe to say we all know there's another recession coming. Nobody knows when. Is that correct? You agree with that?
It is very likely there will be another recession sometime. We're not projecting the time, yes.
Son of a gun, I thought I was going to ask you when it was coming. But we don't know when a recession is coming, but we do know that there's going to be one. Do you do any testing against a possible recession? Let's say 2020, the recession hits. Would you be able to tell us what that might do if it was a mild recession, moderate recession?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the virtue of having economic models. So we have a North Dakota model that is a function or influenced by the U.S. macroeconomic model. Every month, in fact, we provide three U.S. macroeconomic scenarios. The one you saw earlier was our baseline forecast, the one we think is most likely to happen. We also, as a matter of course, provide a more optimistic forecast that's reasonably plausible, and a more pessimistic forecast, generally a recession in the near future, that's also possible, and provide the full details of that forecast. Carl, in the regional group who I just mentioned, every month takes that each of those alternative scenarios, and let's talk about the pessimistic one now, the recession scenario, runs it through the North Dakota economic model. So right now, I could show you what our forecast for North Dakota looks like under the next U.S. recession scenario, for instance. So absolutely. And then once we have a tax model in place, we can show the tax collection implications of that as well. So absolutely.
So we'd be able to sit down here and look at this revenue forecast if we chose a optimistic one, and then understand how much we would be short if, for some reason, 2020, a recession hit and we had a mild recession.
Let's say that.
We would
know.
We would. Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you.
So obviously, you know, you're asking interesting questions to when the recession would occur. Obviously, that's a tougher thing to predict than that, since, say, the size of it. But, you know, we speculate that a recession might start, say, in early 2019, as an example, and we'll show that. But we can then adjust that, too, as well. But you get the implications of the recession occurring and can apply it to different time frames. Absolutely.
Representative Mock.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Diffley, you wouldn't happen to have any examples of your past performance specifically related to forecasting in agriculture energy, would you?
We could get them for you. Okay. I don't. Did we provide any with the original?
Yeah, I'd say most of the states that we work with systematically, you know, not necessarily the bespoke.
You want
to? Yeah, better
use
your microphone.
Yep.
So.
A bespoke revenue model. Yeah, currently our active clients, where we have active revenue models, are all or most states have some element of agriculture. Fewer states have elements of energy production. We are accounting for that. You know, for example, in New York State, there's certainly upstate, you know, a larger energy sector or a larger agricultural sector than obviously what you'd find downstate. Pennsylvania, same thing, but Pennsylvania is also a good example because they have large natural gas reserves in the Marcellus region and are obviously seeing tax benefits due to the amount of exploration production activity. But there are also large rural swaths of the state that are dependent on not just farm commodities, but just livestock, dairy, etc. So, you know, it's probably not as prominent a piece of some of the other modeling that we've done, but certainly components of other revenue models, tax revenue models, do incorporate the impacts of energy and agriculture on the state forecast.
Okay.
But if you generally asked about what we were forecasting for North Dakota in 2013, say, before the OPEC price reduction, I mean, you could see the results of that, I suppose. Right. Was that part of the question?
Yeah, it's part of it. Looking at your client list, your relevant project qualifications, other examples, some states that you've worked with, and I'm guessing based on Mr. O'Neill's response, you have not or currently do not work with any other states on full revenue forecasting that have the similar economic makeup as North Dakota. I mean, a large percentage of our state's economy coming either from agriculture or energy. Large energy or agriculture producers, but may not be the prevailing industries.
In the case of energy, Pennsylvania is a good example. We've worked with their revenue department quite a bit. I think in terms of agriculture, you're probably correct.
Okay.
I'm sure you're correct, I guess.
Mr. Chairman, if I
may. Yes, continue.
You wouldn't happen to know offhand what percentage of Pennsylvania's economy is tied to the energy sector, would you?
I could look it up.
Yeah, fair enough.
It's become more significant than it was.
Right.
You can imagine from
the unfair trivia Jeopardy related questions. So, and then on another note, Mr. Chairman, if I may, thank you. And here, the Does your firm, do you provide a range of confidence in your revenue forecasting so that as we as a body are looking, you know, we plug in our assumptions and we can see what our revenue expectations are, but are you able to provide a range of confidence that 85% that your revenue will land within these margins?
Well, as I was explaining to Senator Cook's question, we provide with those scenarios confidence percentage probabilities for those scenarios. So the answer in that sense is yes. So in any one month, we might say it's 15% probability of the pessimistic scenario and a 30% probability of the optimistic scenario. And those will vary over time, right? And so and that would carry over to the state model as well.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Senator Cook.
I just got one more kind of a personal note. You monitor internet sales. They're growing dramatically and what they do to state revenue.
this is for that might be out of order, but
no,
go ahead.
I'm just curious, if all of a sudden states got collection authority, can you tell what the revenue generated would be?
Well, we could make an estimate. So I'll give you the New York State experience because we both forecast sales tax for New York State, and I happen to forecast sales tax more recently for Suffolk County, New York, part of New York State. The counties in New York State are grappling with the issue where Amazon is now fully, a full vendor in New York State, remits sales, and all the Amazon orders of Amazon products. However, when third-party, I forget what the name is.
Third-party affiliates.
Third-party affiliates provide goods and service goods, Amazon does not collect for them. And that's a hole that we have an estimate for how much it would matter in sales tax. And that's changing all the time, because right now we have online sales up to, I think, 15.5% of total consumer retail sales and rising. We track how fast that rises. So I'm well aware of those nexus type issues and the difficulty. I'm not sure what the North Dakota position is right now, but we'd look into that for sure.
I might say we're divided.
Yes, we are.
Any additional questions? Any further?
Did we have, the process as we go along. We would ask that we have an initial kickoff meeting with the appropriate representatives of the state, and the main purpose there is to understand the tax revenue streams, right? Such as things like how internet sales are currently being paid on sales tax in North Dakota, to be able then to first understand the taxes to our satisfaction, then get access to the revenue streams that we're going to try to forecast. Obviously, we're not asking and don't use, say, individual or business-specific tax records. Those are confidential, we know. But the gross revenue streams we like to use in as disaggregated a fashion as possible. So I know for New York State how many sales tax go to construction vendors, home improvement stores, how much sales tax goes to restaurants, et cetera, and so on. To the extent that's available, that's useful. We understand in all cases it's not available. But that's the type of kickoff meeting we'd have. And then we go to work with creating a data set of North Dakota-specific tax variables, cleaning it, as we say, meaning massaging it to make it consistent and amenable to use with our economic variables, and you can see the details there. One of the things that's always of concern or always needs to be taken care of is seasonal factors. I mentioned Christmas holiday spending. You have to make sure you're dealing with that consistently on a case-by-case basis and build our model in that way.
Representative Mock?
No, that part was answered.
Oh, okay.
And then we provided a timeline which I hope, I assume met to your satisfaction. We took the required timeline, both from the standpoint of the time necessary for us to complete the task, but also your budgetary cycle, et cetera. And we're willing to, obviously, track that to make us as useful as possible as we are to your deliberations, can be to your deliberations. So you see a final first report, a complete and final report, September 28th, 2018. And a second update a quarter, is that a quarter later? January 18th, 2019, which it must have been specified in the RFP, I believe.
And then the offering of an additional update in March, that's about the time. Those dates aren't set yet, but when
okay.
we get the final revenue forecast, or the final revenue numbers from OMB, and
gotcha.
We certainly, I think, would want to have some dialogue with you all before.
Perfect, we're glad to do that, and glad to come out here in this room or whatever, weather permitting. But
don't count on it.
And discuss that. That's not allowed. That's all right.
Not we usually schedule our first one for January 20th.
But we're prepared to work with you, that's for sure. And if you, as long as we know your schedule and ahead of time for things like the OMB meetings, et cetera, we're glad to accommodate it.
For a while.
Final words, Brent? Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So at the back of your presentation is state analysis of North Dakota. Is that current done by one of your staff people who will
I'm sorry,
be?
Sorry, did you add something here?
It's on our packets here.
Oh, okay. I think it was in the proposal.
And so is that data that you have up to, it says November?
The
is that up to, it says it's November 15th.
Not exactly sure what you sent you, so it might be a hair dated. We update that every month.
Okay.
Right. So if you're familiar with BLS, BLS is the Bureau of Labor Statistics. is the most timely monthly reportage on employment conditions across states and metros. They usually release, for instance, the November employment results for the state around December 20th. We will update that web page you saw a screenshot of then.
Okay. And so that information will be along with your other presentation, too, as it's updated with, you know, presented to us?
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
Okay. And then one last question, and I don't know if it's easy for you to answer or not. As there's executive orders and changes coming down from the federal government on a number of policies, whether environmental or however, on a daily basis, is that easy, difficult, impossible to put into your model?
let's take one for example on the changes on the
clean water or the EPA regulations that have to do with our coal industry. You know,
I assume state, and maybe Adam does this all the time, you have fiscal note concept, right? Are they easy to do? They're not, because many times, you know, the chain from a clean water regulation to the economic activity that will presumably be either discouraged or encouraged to an estimate of what that means in terms of spending takes a not inconsiderate amount of time, amount of time.
And then changes in the tax code possibilities are...
Now we'll be set up, here's the thing, we'll be set up because we're doing a tax model to handle tax code, tax rate changes relatively quickly, yes.
Okay.
But some of the other... Having worked, by the way, in New Jersey Treasury and probably in a position that similar to what Adam has, it sounds like, I'm aware of all the sorts of weird things that come out of legislatures, right, that are impossible to analyze. So I can't promise we can turn everything around. But there are a number of things that we can adapt to very quickly, a number of things we can. Right, take some analysis.
Representative Carlson.
Well, thanks, sir. The legislature at various times has had disagreements over some of our other analytics that have been provided to us and the numbers, and how those numbers somehow mysteriously change between meetings. And it's like wondering if we were at the same meeting on the price of oil, the barrels of oil per day. I'm assuming that your projections will include those informations as well. And there are times that we may disagree with some of your assumptions. Do you take that back and reanalyze it? What do you do with those same times when we disagree with some of your basic premises you're dealing with in our state?
All right, first of all, we'll be transparent about the assumptions we're using in the forecast we're giving month to month, meeting to meeting, report to report, so that there's never any question of, well, wait, we didn't say that last month. We'll own up to it if we made a mistake or we were wrong, say. I'm sorry, what was the other question? Oh, if you disagree, there's two things we can do. First of all, we can show you in our models what your assumption would mean if we accepted that as, say, what you think oil prices are going to do next year, or what you think taxpayers will do in response to this federal act, or et cetera. We'll say, okay, we don't think that's true, here's what we think is going to, but if you are true, then we'll show you what our model says that results in, okay? The second part of that is, though, if you say something to me that, based on your knowledge of North Dakota, I say to myself, well, you know, he may have something there, I'll look into it and change my assumptions if need be. Right? Well, I want to learn from you, or I want Laura and Jan to learn from you as much as we can. We do value that local perspective, by all means.
I would just add that, I mean, we don't believe in black boxes. Most important thing in the forecast is understanding with great clarity what the assumptions are. And you know, we can have fundamental disagreements on those assumptions, but as long as they're clear, you know, we can rework the forecast to incorporate alternative assumptions and give that different forecast. You know, and I think the other key piece is that, you know, in between reporting periods, it's important to demonstrate, you know, how the forecast has changed from one period, one forecast, the last forecast, to the current forecast. At least to get some sense of directionally, where is our thinking changing? Are we becoming more optimistic about the future? Are we becoming more pessimistic about the future? Or do we feel like we're in a fairly static period? Either way, you need to demonstrate that variance between the forecast periods, because forecasts generally, you know, will change.
And a follow-up that you mentioned just a little bit is, one of the things that I've found the most valuable is something that's already being done by our other company and by OMB, is that we actually sit down in the room with everybody from the major business sectors in the state and get their opinion where they think things are going.
Yeah.
And I think that somehow this needs to be tied into you guys. I mean, I know you have the analytics, I've always felt the boots on the ground are a key analytic.
Yeah.
And I've disagreed sometimes because it wasn't local enough. I mean, if a farmer tells me he can't get his operating line for next year, that changes a lot. Or if there's 30% of them that aren't going to get it for next year, you know, something you may or may not know, that's pretty important to how we would view our revenue from the ag sector. So how do you plan on handling that, where we could have that tie? Because we can arrange the meetings. It's just a matter of how we put you face-to-face with our people that are on day-to-day running this, generating revenue for the state.
Sure, there are numerous other cases where we are receptive to meetings, generally conference calls for ease, obviously, with the client as they bring in, you know, alternative experts or people with local knowledge, et cetera. We're glad to accommodate that. It's a plus for us, by all means.
I cite the Ohio Council.
Yeah, I'm on the Ohio Governor's Council of Economic Advisors, and we used to meet regularly. The case that's run for president actually sort of stopped it for a while. Another story.
But for instance,
and he would bring in, and there was the other governors before him, by the way, would bring in representatives from the local banks, big manufacturers in the area, and a couple of economists like me, and we do that regularly. Sure.
For example, we'll use oil as an example. The analytics come back and say you're going to have 55 rigs drilling wells every 20 days in the Bakken next biennium, but everybody from the Petroleum Institute tells me we ain't going to be over 40. I mean, if you look at the revenue impact on the difference between those two, it's a lot. And it takes our budget and throws it from something manageable to something not manageable. Now, we will not criticize you, I guarantee you this, if you are low and we raise more money.
Yeah, understood. That's a perfect example, and probably the most clear example, where we have this huge advantage in having a very large team of energy experts who are looking at the individual plays. I've seen, you know, I don't even know what the graphs are called of the outputs of the plays that they project for the Bakken and have over the years. So we'll be constantly in touch with them for this purpose, because that's obviously a significant percentage of your revenue. But if you ask me what percentage it was, I couldn't with Pennsylvania. I don't hesitate to guess.
Even locally, the Oil and Gas Association here has
relationships with people at our firms.
I would be shocked if they didn't, right?
Just making sure that you know how, that we think that's important.
Yeah, very good.
Important component to the whole national picture on these national commodities is what's happening on the ground.
Point taken, and I don't disagree at all. We have a regular, at the national level, well, actually at global level, an executive strategy council, where we invite clients from various sectors in and get that type of feedback.
I have nothing else.
Anything additional in your prepared?
Just to say, I enjoyed the session, good questions. I look forward to working with you.
Thank you. The next item on our agenda is there any committee discussion? Although actually, I think we should ask for comments from anyone in the audience who has any thing they would like to share with us before we have the committee discussion, because that might be helpful if there's someone that wants to say something. Okay. Committee discussion regarding the submitted consultant proposal. Senator Wardner.
I was just pulling my mic close to get ready, but I'll go ahead and say. Well, I've looked through this proposal beforehand, and I think it's very complete. I think they've got a very extensive network that feeds in. I like the global. I like they're down in the trenches in different areas of the country. I mean, they know what's going on in Texas, and they know what's going on in the East Coast, and they know what's going on in a lot of places in this country. And so I like it. I think it's very extensive, and I guess if you're looking for a motion, Mr. Chairman, I'd even make a motion, but if you'd like to wait on that.
And the motion would be that the legislative management, we recommend the legislative management, right? Or do we do it?
To move that the committee recommend that the legislative management chairman
we'll sign
proceed
the
with the contract with IHS.
Is that the motion that I heard you say?
Mr. Chairman, that is the motion that I would, that's exactly what I was thinking of. Yeah. So, Corey.
I'll second that.
Okay, committee discussion. We have a motion and a second. Senator Heckman. Oh, okay. Representative Mott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I, you know, I share, you know, Senator Wardner's, comments and I'm appreciative of the experience that they bring to the table. Obviously, I think anyone who is in economics revenue forecasting knows that the only certainty is that there is no certainty. I mean, the only thing that you really know for sure is that, I mean, if you were ever spot on and 100% right, it was probably more dumb luck than it was forecasting itself. But that said, it is a matter, it's degrees of confidence. And I do appreciate the wealth of information that feeds into their forecasting models. I also will say, Mr. Chairman, that I, to Representative Carlson's question, that there is willingness of IHS to work with us. And if we do have any disagreements on assumptions, or if there's something that we're seeing here on the ground that may differ from their assumptions on it from a national perspective, that they're willing to incorporate those observations into their model and maybe revisit and provide additional calculations. Our two largest industries, agriculture and energy, I hope that IHS is just as willing to work with us and develop, and strengthen their models in those two sectors, just as we hope to benefit from their experience. So I feel confident in their ability to provide accurate revenue forecasting. I think this is a good move for the legislature to undergo. I hope that this gives us a little better information as we forecast for the next biennium, and I think this is a positive step forward for the legislative branch. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Got herself in trouble. Okay, we have a motion before us. Would you call the roll on the motion to accept the proposal and ask the chairman to sign the appropriate documents?
Chairman Holmberg?
Aye.
Senators Cook?
Aye.
Heckman?
Aye.
Wardner?
Aye.
Aye.
Representatives Delzer, Belu.
Yes.
Carlson.
Yes.
Mock.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, the motion carries.
Motion carries, and I'd like to thank our guests and now our employees. I'm sure there'll be paperwork. Is there anything else to come before the committee? Okay, take a motion to adjourn. And seconded.
Second.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, opposed, motion carried.
Yeah, thank you.